Imagine buying your dream boat and writing off the entire purchase immediately. Sounds too good to be true, right? Not with the Big Beautiful Bill. And today we're going to break it down for you. Welcome to a special edition of Yachting Unplugged, the show where we dig into the issues that truly shape the marine industry. I'm your host, Kim Swears, also known as The Boat Boss and managing partner of FB Marine Group, located in Fort Lauderdale, the boating capital of the world. And today we're talking about one of the biggest shifts we've seen in years. This past July, the U.S. Congress passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. And for yacht owners and prospective buyers, the OBBBA reinstates 100% depreciation for charter yachts. And that means if you're considering putting a yacht into charter, buying one, you may be eligible to write the entire purchase price off in this first year. Whether you're a seasoned yacht owner or someone ready to make your first purchase, this is a game changer. And to help us understand exactly what this means, how to leverage it, the loopholes, the pitfalls, all that good stuff, I'm joined by one of the sharpest, the brightest legal minds in our industry, Umberto Bonavita from Robert Allen Law. So Umberto, welcome to Yachting Unplugged.
It's great to be here, Kim. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, it is a
very generous introduction.
Well, you know what? I think you and I have shared the stage before. We're both very passionate about the marine industry, and work-life balance is something that we all struggle with. But when you're passionate about what you do, right, it's not work. It's truly, it's our passion. We enjoy it. But thanks for your time today. I know you've been super, super busy, but this is a subject that my clients have been asking, and you're in the trenches of it. But let's get right down to it. What is the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and how is it affecting our marine industry?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of aspects to the Big Beautiful Bill. I mean, the bill itself is close to 900 pages. You actually eat it down and read it from, cover to cover. And it deals with so many aspects of tax law and intricate, complicated tax regulations. But at the end of the day, what it's trying to stimulate the economy. And I think from that perspective, I think it's a fantastic initiative. And like, for example, this is the bill that establishes that if you're a waiter or waitress, you don't get to pay taxes on tips. This is also the bill that incentivized overtime. So employers now, if they pay overtime time and a half and you're the employee that's working, in an industry where you work overtime and you get time and a half, you don't pay taxes on the half portion, the overtime portion. That's exempt. So there's a lot of aspects to this. We would need several days to go through it. I mean, Congress has been debating. You've been hearing about it in the media all summer, the pros and the cons of it. I'm a big proponent of it. There are critics of it, but time will tell whether, this was a good bill or a bad bill. But I firmly believe that it's going to establish that it was great for the economy.
And there's even things like your car interest. You can write off your car interest up to, I think, $10,000, I read as well. Like, there's some major pros to this bill. It's not that bad.
No, totally. And the aspect of the bill that relates to yachting, if you will, because there are many aspects to it, deals with bonus appreciation. And previously, we had bonus appreciation, but in prior years, Congress phased it out over time. So you were able to depreciate 100% of the cost of the asset that you purchase, if it's a qualifying asset. And we'd get into that later. But assuming that we're dealing with a qualifying asset, in prior years, you were able to depreciate 100% of that in the year you put it into service. But then there was a phasing out approach. So each year, the percentage that you can depreciate reduced. So it went from 100 to 80 to 60 to 40%. And what Trump did was say, okay, we're not going to phase it out. We're going back to 100%. And it reinstated what they had back in 2017. And so what the Big Beautiful Bill does, it also takes a lot of what Trump, the tax benefits of his initiative when he was in office previously in the prior administration before Biden. And now it's basically making a lot of those incentives, a lot of those initiatives permanent. It's enacting them permanently.
So what was the boating in the yachting industry back then? I mean, what did it do for the industry in 2017? Was there like a frenzy, buying frenzy? What impact did it have?
I mean, it certainly prompted a lot of high net worth individuals that can afford to have a yacht and that have a tax reason to reduce their taxable income, their taxable liability, to look at yachting as a way to incorporate and diversify their wealth management, estate planning, and tax planning needs. It's another tool or arsenal that you could have in your overall wealth preservation scheme and seeking to obviously, you know, minimize your tax liability in a way that allows also, from the government's perspective, stimulate the economy, stimulate spending and consumerism and spending. And that's the great thing about this is it touches upon so many aspects of the yachting industry, because to do this, you're going to need to deal with a yacht broker. You're going to need to deal with a crew and competent crew and employee crew. Even if maybe you have a smaller vessel that you can say, hey, I don't really need a crew. I can do this on my own. If you're looking to do bonus depreciation, you're going to need a crew because they, from the IRS's perspective, they want to see that you're running a business. And so you need employees. So really the key is, I would say, is like in the past, like let's take an office building, for example. You were able to purchase an office building, and let's say the IRS categorizes each type of qualifying asset. So for example, in the case of an office building, they'll say, well, the office building has a lifespan of 20 years. So we'll allow you to depreciate the acquisition cost of the building over the 20-year span. You can deduct. And what this bill says, we're not going to require you to have to wait and spread out the depreciation over the life of the asset that you have it in service. We're going to allow you to do it in year one up front.
That's incredible. And that is massive.
Now, obviously, I'm sort of simplifying. There's a lot of intricacies, but that's the overview.
Okay. So, Umberto, you had me hooked. You had me hooked at the first year. To full depreciation in the first year. Let's get into the nitty gritty. Talk about the boat and the yacht, or both, that qualify for this 100% bonus depreciation. What does that space look like for our clients that are listening?
So let's start with the premise that to pull this off successfully, meaning that the IRS would approve it, or if the IRS looks at it and they want to audit it, they'll give you a clean bill of health and say, okay, you did this properly. They want to see that you're doing this for profit, that you're running a business. And the opposite of that would be if they determine that you purchased a yacht, which is great, there's nothing wrong with that, but you did it for recreational, personal use, you did it for your own enjoyment. So that's kind of the point of departure. If you want to be able to successfully accomplish bonus depreciation, you have to establish that you're running a business. And so the question, what yacht is eligible, what's the right yacht, what's the wrong yacht, is not like a bright line test that says, well, if the yacht is under 50 feet, it's not going to work. Or the yacht has to be a minimum of a 50-meter yacht. That's not the case. The answer to the question that I advise clients is it has to be a yacht that you can establish that you're running a business out of. So in this case, it would be running a charter business. Mm-hmm. So if you can establish that you're running a charter business with the center console, mm-hmm. then why not? You can do it.
You just have
to be able to evidence that and establish it. And nice. And how would you do that? You would have to basically start foundationally. You have to have the proper structure, ownership structure, to make sure that, for example, if you have it titled in your own name, the IRS might say, well, that's not really a business because it's not owned by a company. If you have it owned by a corporation rather than what they call, in IRS terms, a disregarded entity that's kind of like a pass-through, which would be either an LLC or a partnership.
And you can't do that, correct?
Yeah, the IRS will say, well, that's not going to work. If you have independent contractors, day crew that work on a per diem basis as independent contractors, they're not on your payroll, they're not the IRS is going to look at that as a red flag and say, you're not really running a business because you don't have the employees. So there's not like a bright line test that says, if you do A, B, C, and D, you're going to be eligible. They look at the whole kind of landscape of how you're utilizing the yacht, how many days you used it personally versus how many days you had it in service. But at the end of the day, you need to convince the IRS that you're running a business. And how do you run a business? Well, what are the indicators that you're running a business? If you're operating it locally in Broward County or in Miami-Dade County, you want to establish that you went out and you obtained, for example, a business tax receipt or a business license for the entity that owns the vessel, because that's evidence that you are running a business. The same way that if you have a dive shop or a bait and tackle shop, you need a business license. Or if you're going to charter a vessel and that's the business that you're running, you need to have a business license for that. And it might seem mundane and trivial to say, well, I got to go get a license. But these are the things that the IRS are going to look at as signs. Are you running a business? Is this for profit? Rather than is this motivated by personal recreational use?
Right, right. All right. So I took some notes. So A, it has to be a business. 100%. Like most of the people we're speaking to are probably business owners or executives. They get it. They do this day in and day out. So it's just replacing the apple with an orange, if you will. It's a business and it has to look, smell, quack, everything like a business. Correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Now, the next thing I wrote down was employees. They cannot be 1099. They can have to be employees, whether part-time or full-time.
Correct. They have to be on the payroll.
On the payroll.
Now, they have to be on the payroll of the entity, the same entity that owns the vessel, or an affiliate company that shares a common ownership, a common parent with the entity that owns the vessel. Again, I'm simplifying, but that's kind of the overview.
Right. Well, I have a client.
At the end of the day, in terms of how you hire employees, you want to be able to tie the employees, your staff, your crew, and the vessel to the same ultimate beneficial owner, who's the taxpayer that at the end of the day is seeking the depreciation.
I see. So, for instance, I have a client that has a yacht that one of their mates and stews is also works in what they call the home is owned by the LLC, but it's still owned by the same company, if you will. And she also does some charters. So she would be okay. It would have to be under that person or under that company, if you will.
Yes.
Parent company.
Yeah, that would work.
Okay. Now let's get into the usage part, because half of it's for fun and half of it's for business. Can you get into what that looks like, so we don't get in trouble and we can follow the rules?
Yeah, from a usage perspective, you have to be mindful of where you're using it, right? So if you're, and where you use it is also dictated by where you're registered and documented.
Okay.
So that if you're a U.S. Coast Guard, U.S. documented vessel, you're always under the U.S. umbrella. So it's an asset that's, let's say, an American asset, if you will, and you can use it anywhere. You could use it in the Caribbean. You could use it in the Mediterranean. And provided you're operating it as a charter business, you'll meet the criteria for the bonus depreciation. If, on the other hand, you're a foreign flag vessel, mm-hmm. So you're not U.S. documented. So let's say you're registered in Jamaica or Cayman Islands or Marshall Islands, your foreign flag, then you're not considered a U.S. asset, even if it might be owned by a U.S. company. It's not documented in the U.S. So in that case, you have to establish that you're using it in U.S. waters or U.S. territoriality. So U.S. waters would be anywhere, you know, on the eastern seaboard that's considered part of, you know, U.S. territorial waters, or, for example, in the U.S. Virgin Islands. If you're not using it, you know, in South Florida, as an example.
Okay, so let's reiterate. So it has to be U.S. Coast Guard documented, you said. And if it's a foreign flag.
It doesn't have to be U.S. Coast Guard documented. It's a lot easier if it is. But if it's not, and if it's foreign flag, then when you're using it, when you're putting it in service, so So you're using it for business, for profit. You need to be using it in U.S. waters. So if you're, for example, if you're a Cayman flagged vessel, okay, owned by a U.S. taxpayer, and you send it to the Med and you run charter in Greece and in Turkey or in the south of France, that's not eligible. You're going to have a problem because you're not U.S. documented and you're not running your business in the U.S. territory.
So what if the vessel repositions to America for half of the period of the year? Will that justify as?
Yeah, there's flexibility to be able to pull it off. Like, for example, we had a client that took delivery of a yacht in the south of France in early November. Okay, this is a couple of years back, but right around Thanksgiving, they close on its own bottom. They rushed it to the USVI. It was about a 3-week trip. It got to the USVI beginning of December just to be able to put it into charter use, to be able to establish that it was ready, willing, the vessel was ready, willing, and able, and the entity that owns the vessel was ready, willing, and able to charter, was chartering it, and it was in service. It was available for charter. It was listed for charter, and it was foreign flagged, but it was actually a foreign-owned entity as well. It was a Marshall Islands entity that was owned by a U.S. Delaware LLC, and we were able to do it. So there is flexibility. The key is to plan and structure properly, and to do that, you need the right team assembled so that they can advise you to make sure that you're checking all the boxes.
Got it. Well, this has been just incredible. I tell you, I've learned so much already, but let's go into the record keeping now. Let's talk about that. What does it look like? What do we have to do in order to make sure that the IRS is happy and that we don't get in trouble?
So, I mean, record keeping is a really broad term, and it's critically important because if there is an audit, that's what's going to save, make or break you, because you'll be able to point to your file and show it to the IRS. And with your tax advisors, you'll be able to establish that you did everything properly. So record keeping runs the whole gamut from how the vessel was structured, how it's owned, you know, whether you have your corporate governance documents in place, you know, the operating agreement, and even the charter documents are done properly. Your crew contracts, establishing that they're on payroll, that they're employees, establishing that you've been your due diligence to confirm that they're U.S. residents, U.S. citizens in terms of the crew, because you have problems if you use foreign crew when you're doing your charter. Mm-hmm. Also, another important aspect of record keeping was the business plan, establishing that you approached this even prior to the acquisition. You approach it as a business. You did your due diligence to see, okay, is this what kind of charter income can this vessel generate for me on a weekly basis? How many weeks could I have it in service realistically? Getting the opinion of a charter broker, getting a fair market valuation on the vessel to see what kind of income it can garner in the marketplace. If you were a comp analysis of similar vessels, what are they getting in the market? Establishing how many hours the owner, the taxpayer, devoted and spent preparing this paper, you know, keeping track of that, documenting it. There's a lot of work that goes into it, but a lot of people don't like the term anal, but the more anal you are in approaching this and diligent, the better off you are if you have to withstand the scrutiny of an IRS audit.
Okay.
And the key is obviously to have the right tax advisors. So I'm not a tax lawyer. I'm not a CPA. I'm the yacht lawyer, which I love my role because I'm kind of like the quarterback, the general manager assembling the team. I love making sure that all the elements are in place so that we can help the client achieve the objective, the bonus depreciation. That is so critical that you have on that team. You have your CPA and you have your tax attorney.
So the team consists of you, the tax lawyer, accountant, charter broker, yacht broker to purchase it, Am I missing anyone else that's part of that core team?
Actually, depending on the size of the yacht, the larger yachts, to pull this off, I think you really need a competent, capable yacht manager.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. Like a yacht management company, if you will.
Yacht management company.
Okay. Got it. All right. Let's go into how it's changed your life. I can say, you know, Jim Cramer, I love Jim Cramer. If you know stocks, you love Jim Cramer. He says it's a strong buy. I'm saying it's a strong buy. You're saying it's a strong buy. The administration believes this is going to help inject a lot of consumer confidence and sales in many areas, revenue. What do you think? How has it changed? What new clients are you seeing? Are you seeing new clients? Are you seeing, you know, obviously, are there family offices that have never been, in yachting that are all of a sudden said yes, called Umberto and said, listen, I'm interested. How has it impacted that first-time buyer for you?
Yeah, it's changed in the sense that we're getting more inquiries and we're being engaged and retained by more and more first-time yacht owners through their family offices, through their financial advisors, primarily family offices, driven by their seeking to take advantage of the bonus appreciation. And we're talking about first-time yacht owners. I mean, we're seeing also a lot of experienced, savvy, sophisticated yacht owners that have been buying and selling and using, enjoying yachts their whole lives. And now they're back at it because of the big, beautiful bill. And they know what they're doing and they're at it again. But the great thing is that it's bringing into the industry and into yacht ownership first-time yacht owners, which is, I think, is fantastic.
No, it is.
Because it hooks them. And once you're hooked, you love it. And notwithstanding, all the complaints that you'll get, and, we all know the old adage, the happiest day in a yacht owner's life is the day he buys it and the day he sells it. And I hear that all the time. And you hear all the complaints. But at the end of the day, they'll come back. And yeah, call me crazy. I had a bad experience. I had a horrible warranty. This boat was a lemon. I probably shouldn't do this again. But you know what? I found this other boat. I really like it. And we're going to try to do it. At this time, it'll be a better experience.
Right.
And you love to see that.
No, absolutely. There's nothing better. I always say, whether you live, work, or play in the water, just get on the water. Because there's nothing better than a lifestyle on the water. I call it the Kool-Aid effect. It's like, it's like women. We give birth and we're saying, we'll never do that again. And then you do it again. You forget those days that are not so great, but boating, there's nothing better than being on the water. And I really, truly believe that this is going to really bring new people in, return, and obviously the people that have stepped back out that will be back in. And I'm really excited to see what the future holds. We're coming into boat show season. We have a lot of the boat shows across the pond coming up, as well as the largest boat show in the world, the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show, followed by Miami and then Palm Beach next year. So we're hoping that this shoots some energy into the yachting and the boating industry for sure. So tell us, where do we find you? And any last words of advice you can give to anyone looking at doing this?
Well, you can find me and my whole team, because it's not just me, but Robert Allen Law. We have offices in Palm Beach and Miami. Our website address, it's robertallenlaw.com. You'll find us at, the boat shows. We typically have a hospitality venue. We'll have one at Fort Lauderdale. We'll also be at Cannes and Monaco shows. You can find us there. We're going to have a couple of events and receptions. But you could also email me at any time, or my whole team, fantastic team, colleagues from, the founder of our firm, Bob Aaron, my partners, Claudia Casillas, Chris Anderson, Adrian Carbarani, Bobby Rodriguez. And if I left anybody out, don't be insulted, but we have a full cast.
Well, I love it. Well, I can't thank you enough for the time that you and I have spent behind the scenes preparing for this episode. I think it's really much needed that we brought this message to the world. to buyers, also people in the industry. Reach out to whether it's me as Kim Swears, the Boat Boss, as a yacht broker, or your personal yacht broker. Get into a boat show, get online, find that boat, whether it be a center console, as I said, up into a mega yacht. You have that opportunity under the One Big Beautiful Act to own a boat as long as it qualifies, as exactly as Umberto had mentioned in this episode. So if you like, go ahead.
No, to answer your other question, what advice do I have to potential yacht owners that are interested in trying to take advantage of the big, beautiful bill and get bonus appreciation, if it makes sense for them to do so? The most important thing I would say is, first, work with a good yacht broker, because it starts with the yacht broker to find the vessel that's right for you, that's eligible for chartering the way that you need to be able to do it. So if I encourage, you know, potential yacht owners in this case that are seeking bonus appreciation, but first and foremost, get the right broker to advise you, the yacht broker. It starts there. Then once you have the boat you think that meets the criteria that you like, then contact the yacht lawyer. It's not just us at Robert Allen Law. You know, we're blessed in South Florida. There's a lot of talented, really good attorneys. So work with the yacht attorney and then start assembling the team. Get the tax lawyer in place that knows about bonus appreciation for yachts. Get your CPA involved so that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. And then the missing piece after that would be getting a good crew management advisor to find the right crew, depending on the size of the vessel, and also a charter broker, because you need to be able to list it and have it in a central listing, because it has to be advertised for charter. They want to see that you're running the business. Right? The long and the short of it is, you need the right team, and you need to be patient, and you need to be deliberate. Don't rush into this thinking that you can pull it off, that it's relatively easy, because that's when you're going to make your mistake.
Well, you got to dot your I's and cross your T's, as we say. And knowledge is power. Knowledge is your best crew member, I can say, right? No. Well, thanks again, Umberto. We appreciate your time. Anyone has any questions, I'm going to list all our contact information in the description. If you like the show, which I'm sure you do, please like, subscribe, share, comment, and reach out to the Boat Boss for any other questions, Umberto as well. And thanks again for joining us on this special edition of Yachting Unplugged. And we look forward to seeing everyone on the water. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Take care.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month, with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.